Well, Friday was Valentine's Day, and I know Valentine's isn't in the Bible, but love is in the Bible, relationships, marriage is in the Bible, and Monday is Family Day. So, looking over my notes, I realized that it had been 10 years since I had preached on the book of Ruth. Ruth is such a great book. It's one of my favorite books. It's a touching story. It's a story of love. It's a story of the sovereignty of God. And so I just felt the Lord leading me to preach through the book of Ruth. I'm going to actually read most of the book here this morning. God will speak to us, I'm sure, as we hear this. So I'll begin Ruth chapter 1, starting at verse 1. Ruth chapter 1, starting at verse 1. During the time of the judges, there was famine in the land. A man left Bethlehem in Judah with his wife and two sons to live in the land of Moab for a while. Now, Moab is a nation next to them, pagan nation. The man's name was Elimelech, and his wife's name was Naomi. The names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion. They were Ephratites from Bethlehem in Judah. They entered the land of Moab and settled there. Naomi's husband, Elimelech, died, and she was left with her two sons. Her sons took Moabite women as their wives. One was named Orpah, and the second was named Ruth. After they lived in Moab about 10 years, both Mahlon and Chilion also died, and Naomi was left without her two children and without her husband. She and her daughters-in-law prepared to leave the land of Moab because she heard in Moab that the Lord had paid attention to his people's need by providing them food. She left the place where she had been living, accompanied by her two daughters-in-law, and traveled along the road leading back to the land of Judah. She said to them, "Each of you go back home. Go back to your mother's home. May the Lord show faithful love to you as you have shown to the dead and to me. May the Lord enable each of you to find security in the house of your new husband." She kissed them, and they wept loudly. "No, no," they said to her, "we will go with you to your people." But Naomi replied, "Return home, my daughters. Why do you want to go with me? Am I able to give you any more sons who could become your husbands? Return home, my daughters. Go on, for I am too old to have another husband. Even if I thought there was still hope for me to have a husband tonight and to bear sons, would you be willing to wait for them to grow up? Would you restrain yourselves from remarrying? No, my daughters, my life is much too bitter for you to share, because the Lord's hand has turned against me." Again, they wept loudly, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Naomi said, "Look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her God. Follow your sister-in-law." But Ruth replied, "Do not persuade me to leave you or go back and not follow you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you live, I will live. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May Yahweh punish me and do so severely if anything but death separates you and me." When Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped trying to persuade her. The two of them traveled until they came to Bethlehem. When they entered Bethlehem, the whole town was excited about their arrival, and the local women exclaimed, "Can this be Naomi?" Now, Naomi, you need to know, Naomi means pleasant. Pleasant. So can this really be the pleasant woman who left with a husband and two sons? "Don't call me Naomi or pleasant. Call me Mara," she said. Mara means bitter. "So don't call me pleasant. Call me Mara, bitter, she answered, for the Almighty has made me very bitter. I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has pronounced judgment on me, and the Almighty has afflicted me? So Naomi came back from the land of Moab with her daughter-in-law Ruth, the Moabitess. They arrived in Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. So we see tragedy strikes, and we see people struggling to stay true to God through this suffering. Death of husband, death of sons, can't even imagine. In a foreign land, there are times when all we can do is just hold on to God. And certainly, Naomi was struggling here. She admits this, my life is bitter. But along with this, along with all the suffering, we see Ruth. We see Ruth's devotion, her loyalty. We see her character, her love for her mother-in-law. And don't miss this. We see her willingness to leave her family's gods for the God of Israel. Okay? Don't miss this. Chapter 1, verse 16 here. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. Now, this is huge in this day. I mean, Israel had a hard time staying true to their one God, Yahweh. They were tempted by the nations and the idols of the peoples all around them. And here Ruth is saying, I will leave my family, I will leave my idols and gods, I will come and make Yahweh my God, along with you. Well, beautiful, beautiful beginning. Let's go on. Chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative on her husband's side named Boaz. He was a prominent man of noble character from Elimelech's family. Ruth, the Moabitess, asked Naomi, "Will you let me go into the fields and gather fallen grain behind someone who allows me to?" So let me stop you. So what you need to understand, at least in Israel, this was a custom. It wasn't just custom, it was law. In the Old Testament, in the law here, it says to, when you reap your harvest, don't take the time to go over that a second time. You know, you don't know how long it's going to be before the rain's going to come and ruin the rest of the harvest. So you're just gathering everything you can as quickly as you can, and don't go over your field a second time. Don't have somebody come along and try to gather all that you left behind the first time. Leave that. Specifically, leave that for the poor, for the fatherless, for those who don't have a field to go harvest. And actually, the scripture, the law even says, don't reap to the very edge of your field. Don't reap the corners. You know, if there's a little spot over there, don't even worry about that. Just move on to the next. God will provide for you, and God provides for the poor in this way, what we would call workfare. We're giving them a handout. It's giving them an opportunity to provide for themselves and to keep their dignity, to have something constructive to do, to provide for themselves even when they are poor. So that's a setup here, and so Ruth knew about this, and so she asked Naomi, "Will you let me go and gather grain behind the harvesters?" Naomi answered her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So Ruth left, verse 3, Ruth left and entered the field to gather grain behind the harvesters. She happened to be in a portion of land belonging to Boaz, who was from Elimelech's family. Later, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem. He said to the harvesters, "The Lord be with you." "The Lord bless you," they replied. Boaz asked his servant who was in charge of the harvesters, "Whose young woman is this?" The servant said, "She is the young Moabitess woman who returned with Naomi from the land of Moab. She asked, "Will you let me gather fallen grain from among the bundles behind the harvesters?" She came and has remained from early morning until now, except that she rested a little while in the shelter. Now, let me stop here as well. Whose young woman is this? I'm sure feminists read this and just howl at this, as they do at much of the Bible. I mean, most all modern feminism is a rant against the Creator. But whose young woman is this? I don't see this as possession. Not as possession. I see this as responsibility, protection. Who's providing for this young woman? Who's protecting her? Because here she is out here in a field, people that she doesn't even know. She's trying to gather enough to eat, maybe even to provide for her family. Who is here to protect her? And you know why I think this? You know why I think that's what Boaz is thinking? Because what happens? What did Boaz do? Fatherly Boaz steps up. So let's continue reading there. Verse 8. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Listen, my daughter, don't go and gather grain in another field, and don't leave this one, but stay here close to my female servants." Okay, protection. "Stay here close to my female servants. See which field they are harvesting and follow them. Haven't I ordered the young men not to touch you?" Again, protection. Boaz is a safe man, and he's enforcing this. "Haven't I ordered the young men not to touch you? When you are thirsty, go and drink from the jars the young men have filled." Generosity. She bowed with her face to the ground and said to him, "Why are you so kind to notice me, although I am a foreigner?" Boaz answered, "Everything you have done for your mother-in-law since your husband's death has been fully reported to me. How you left your father and mother and the land of your birth, and how you came to a people you didn't previously know. May the Lord reward you for what you have done, and may you receive a full reward from the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." So he's blessing her. "My Lord," he said, "you have been so kind to me, for you have comforted and encouraged your slave, although I am not like one of your female servants." In other words, I don't even come up to the level of your female servants. At mealtime, Boaz told her, "Come over here and have some bread and dip it in the vinegar sauce." So she sat beside the harvesters, and he offered her roasted grain. She ate and was satisfied and had some left over. Notice her frugalness. When she got up to gather grain, Boaz ordered his young men, "Let her even gather grain among the bundles, and don't humiliate her. Pull out some stalks from the bundles for her and leave them for her to gather. Don't rebuke her." So Ruth gathered grain in the field until evening. She beat out what she had gathered, and it was about 26 quarts of barley. According to the math I saw, that would be about 15 kilo of barley. She picked up the grain and went into the town where her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. Then she brought out what she had left over from her meal and gave it to her. Then her mother-in-law said to her, "Where did you gather barley today, and where did you work? May the Lord bless the man who noticed you." Ruth told her mother-in-law about the man she had worked with and said, "The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz." Then Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, "May he be blessed by the Lord, who has not forsaken his kindness to the living or the dead." Naomi continued, "This man is a close relative. He is one of our family redeemers." So If you're a woman, you marry, and your husband dies, his brother is to take you as his wife. And so that they would keep the land in the family and not let it just be taken or sold to someone else. That person would be called a family redeemer. Ruth the Moabitess said, "He also told me, 'Stay here with my young men until they have finished all my harvest.'" So Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, Ruth, "My daughter, it is good for you to work with his female servants so that nothing will happen to you in another field." Ruth stayed close to Boaz's female servants and gathered grain until the barley and the wheat harvests were finished. And she lived with her mother-in-law. Wow. So we see again the sovereignty of God through suffering. We see that God provides through the integrity of his people and through their generosity. So Boaz, first we see that he protects this foreigner who has come into his town. And then he blesses her for her faithfulness to her mother-in-law. And then he's generous. He's helping her out, because he knows she's working hard to provide for her aged mother. Ruth, we see her humility, her hard work, her frugalness. She doesn't even eat everything. I mean, sure, she's been starving. She probably hadn't had much of a meal in a while, and she's provided food, and she eats, but she saves some for her mother-in-law at home. And Naomi sees God's hand at work, providing for them. This is not an accident that you happen to be in Boaz's field. So, let's continue. Ruth chapter 3, verse 1. Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, shouldn't I find security for you so that you'll be taken care of? Now, isn't Boaz a relative? Haven't you been working with his female servants? This evening, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor." So winnowing is separating the grain from the chaff and either throwing it up in the air so the wind blows the chaff away, or beating it out, or threshing it on the floor. So he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. "Wash, put on perfumed oil, and wear your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor, but don't let the man know you are there until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, notice the place where he's lying. Go in and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will explain to you what you should do." So Ruth said to her, "I will do everything you say." She went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had instructed her. After Boaz ate, drank, and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the end of the pile of barley. Then she went in secretly, uncovered his feet, and lay down. At midnight, Boaz was startled, turned over, and there at his feet was a woman. So he asked, "Who are you?" "I am Ruth, your slave," she replied. "Spread your cloak over me, for you are a family redeemer." Spread your cloak. In other words, this literally, spread the wing of your garment over me. So as he had said, "Under whose wings you have come for refuge, God," she is saying, "Would you be the answer to your own prayer for me?" Then he said, "May the Lord bless you, my daughter. You have shown more kindness now than before, because you have not pursued younger men, whether rich or poor. Don't be afraid, my daughter. I will do for you whatever you say, since all the people in my town know that you are a woman of noble character. Yes, it is true that I am a family redeemer, but there is a redeemer closer than I. Stay here tonight, and in the morning, if he wants to redeem you, that's good. Let him redeem you. But if he doesn't want to redeem you, as the Lord lives, I will. Now lie down until morning. So she lay down at his feet until morning, but got up while it was still dark. Then Boaz said, "Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor." Okay, this is not like the pagan nations around that would have prostitutes out in the harvest celebrations. No. Don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. And he told Ruth, "Bring the shawl you're wearing and hold it out." When she held it out, he shoveled 6 measures of barley into her shawl, and she went into the town. She went to her mother-in-law, Naomi, who asked her, "How did it go, my daughter?" Then Ruth told her everything the man had done for her. She said, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley because he said, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" Naomi said, "My daughter, wait. Wait until you find out how things go. For he won't rest until he resolves this today." So, notice, when it says that she is to uncover his feet, that is probably so that he would get cold sometime during the night. He wouldn't sleep all through the night. He would get cold, and he'd wake in the middle of the night, and he'd notice this woman at his feet. So this is nothing sinful involved here. So don't misunderstand this. Ruth here is acting in covenant faithfulness to Naomi. She is following her suggestion, but she's taking care of her mother-in-law. Not only is she acting in faithfulness to Naomi, she's acting faithfulness to her dead husband, Mahlon. And she's faithful to God and his plan for providing for family and keeping the family property together and all that. And what we see here too is Boaz. Boaz is a man of integrity. He certainly doesn't do anything inappropriate here. Even beyond that, he says, I'm impressed. I will take care of you here. I will marry you. But there is actually somebody who's in line in front of me. And so I've got to do things totally appropriately. I've got to do things right. And so I've got to talk to him first. But he knew Ruth's noble character. He says in verse 11 there, "Oh, the people in my town know that you are a woman of noble character." And so we see God unfolding this as we go along. So Ruth chapter 4, we'll begin with verse 1. So the end of the story here. Boaz went to the gate of the town and sat down there. Soon the family redeemer Boaz had spoken about came by. Boaz called him by name and said, "Come over here and sit down." So he went over and sat down. Then Boaz took 10 men of the town's elders and said, "Sit here." And they sat down. See, this is where all the transactions were done for the town. This is where trials would happen here with the elders at the gate of the city. So Boaz said, to the redeemer, closer relative, "You sit down here, and 10 men to be observers, you sit down here." And they sat down. And he said to the redeemer, "Naomi, who returned from the land of Moab, is selling a piece of land that belonged to our brother Elimelech. I thought I should inform you. Buy it back in the presence of all these seated here and in the presence of the elders of my people. If you want to redeem it, do so. But if you do not want to redeem it, tell me so that I will know, because there isn't anyone other than you to redeem it, and I am next after you." "Oh, I want to redeem it," he answered. Then Boaz said, "On the day you buy the land from Naomi, You will also require Ruth, the Moabitess, the wife of the deceased man, to perpetuate the man's name on his property. The Redeemer replied, I can't redeem it myself, or I will ruin my own inheritance. He probably had a wife and children, and inheritance would then become very complicated. I can't redeem it myself. Take my right of redemption, because I can't redeem it. I mean, you can almost hear him say, oh, so that's what this is about. Okay. Verse 7, in an earlier period in Israel, a man removed his sandal and gave it to the other party in order to make any matter legally binding concerning the right of redemption or the exchange of property. This was a method of legally binding a transaction in Israel because, you know, nobody takes your sandal. Okay, you got to give it to him. So it was a sign. Everybody could see. They all understood. So, verse 8. So the Redeemer removed his sandal and said to Boaz, buy back the property yourself. Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses today that I am buying from Naomi everything that belonged to Elimelech, Chilion, Mahlon. I also acquire Ruth the Moabitess, Mahlon's widow, as my wife, to perpetuate the deceased man's name on his property, so that his name will not disappear among his relatives or from the gate of his home. You are witnesses today. The elders and all the people who were at the gate said, we are witnesses. May the Lord make the woman who is entering your house like Rachel and Leah, who together built the house of Israel. May you be powerful in Ephrathah and famous in Bethlehem. May your house become like the house of Perez, the son Tamar bore to Judah, because of the offspring the Lord will give you by this young woman. Boaz took Ruth. She became his wife. When he was intimate with her, the Lord enabled her to conceive, and she gave birth to a son. Then the woman said to Naomi, praise the Lord, who has not left you without a family redeemer today. May his name become well known in Israel. He will renew your life and sustain you in your old age. Indeed, your daughter-in-law, who loves you and is better to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Naomi took the child, placed him on her lap, and took care of him. The neighbor woman said, a son has been born to Naomi, and they named him Obed. Obed means servant. Obed, he was the father of Jesse, the father of David, who became king. So, wonderful story. Today, I really think that I should speak to some of the strangest part of this book. Ruth's going to the threshing floor. It's a subject of lots of questions, lots of speculation. It always comes up, people ask about it, and so I want to take some time and talk about this today. So first of all, Boaz. It appears that Boaz never dreamed that Ruth would be happy to marry an older guy like him. He is older. He's clearly older. We don't know exactly how much older, but first time he meets her in chapter 2, verse 8, he calls her my daughter. The next time, when she comes to him at the threshing floor, again, he calls her my daughter in verse 10, and again in verse 11, don't be afraid, my daughter. This is a way to show that yes, she's younger, but it's also a way he's showing he's protecting her and he's looking out for her, almost like an older brother, but here, you know, like kind of like a father. In verse 10, he says, then he said, may the Lord bless you, my daughter. You have shown more kindness now than before, because you have not pursued younger men, whether rich or poor. So younger men. He's clearly saying he's a little bit older. What he's saying to her is that she could have easily found a young man, a nice looking, you know, strong young man, and who would have been happy to become her husband. And he's saying, you're showing more kindness to me, to your mother-in-law, to your dead husband, by following God's plan here, rather than pursuing a younger man. The second thing we see here with Boaz is that though it's a man's place to initiate and pursue, and then let me start. So yes, it is a man's place. Proverbs 18:22 says, a man who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. So man who finds a wife. Proverbs 31:10, where it begins this section on the noble wife, it says, who can find a capable wife? She is far more precious than jewels. So again, who can find a capable wife? So though it is a man's place to initiate and pursue, Boaz apparently did not think it appropriate to pursue Ruth because of his power position. He's clearly in a position of power, and you could even say authority over her just because of his position. Just think about this. So this creepy old rich man is now hitting on the young poor foreigner. Okay, that does not look good. He didn't think that was appropriate, and so he did not want to abuse his position of power. If he starts to show interest in her, what is she supposed to do? She can't say no to a man like that. What if he says, well, then you can go find some other field. You can, you know, kicks her out of the field, stops being generous to her, stops providing for her and her mother-in-law. If he begins to pursue her, it is very likely that she will not feel she could refuse him. And he did not want to put her in that position. He did not want in any way to be seen as abusing his power. And even at that, at least, he would never have known whether she said yes because she felt desperate, or she said yes to him because she felt she couldn't refuse him. So Boaz did not pursue her. So, Ruth. What was she thinking? I know some people that I've talked to who hate this story because they think that she was a gold digger, you know, chasing after this rich man, that what she did was inappropriate for her to go in. And so, let me just speak to that. No, the text never says that anything inappropriate happened here. Not at all. As a matter of fact, notice it's very clear that the instruction is you are to uncover his feet so that he will end up waking up probably, but you are to uncover his feet and lay down. Notice it doesn't say she snuggled in here next to him or anything. Not at all. She uncovers his feet and then she lays down. And we know this partly because what Ruth says to him is, throw the corner of your robe over me. So she's not up next to, close to, snuggled under him. Not at all. Just merely uncovered his feet and then laid down close enough for him to be able to see her, but maybe not even see her that well, because what does he do? He asks, who are you? So, nothing inappropriate happened there. So some hate this story, but others say, oh, so it's okay for a woman to make the first move? It's okay for a woman to ask a guy to marry her? Okay. Recognize that these are some extenuating circumstances, okay? And in these extenuating circumstances, God worked through family. He worked through family. Notice in chapter 3, verse 1, this is Naomi's idea. Ruth going in and showing her openness to Boaz. Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, shouldn't I find security for you so that you will be taken care of?" Now, isn't Boaz a relative? And so, you know, this was clearly Naomi's idea. Ruth had no other way to approach him. You see, she couldn't go to his house and knock on the door and say, "Hey, I could be interested in, you know." She probably had no way, with her position and Boaz's position, she had no way to even be able to talk to him privately. And so this idea of going into the threshing floor and seeing him there when he would be alone. Notice too, it also gave him the opportunity to say no privately. Okay? Boaz could have woken up and said, "I think I'll pass. There's actually this other guy who's closer to you than me. I'll let him redeem you." No, that's thanks anyways. Also, this, her going to him privately in this way, let him make the first public move. Everybody else didn't know about this conversation they had here, there at the threshing floor. Nobody else knew. And so the first thing people see is Boaz taking appropriate steps, leading. And so he gets to keep his integrity and his position in the family and in leadership and in the community, respect. So he gets to make the first public move. What we see here is it is a man's place to initiate and pursue, but we see that a woman can show openness to a man. She can show openness or interest to a man appropriately. Okay? She doesn't have to be throwing herself at his feet, as the saying used to go. We've heard people say something like, "Oh, well, she always laughs at his jokes," or "Well, she's always hanging around." See, when a woman is open to conversation, possibly leading to a relationship, she can look the man in the eye. She can linger and if she doesn't want to keep talking to him, she'll look away. She can, you know, slip out, fidget, you know, very, very easy to communicate that. Let me give you an example here. One of the first times that our son-in-law Alan had the opportunity to preach, he was asked to preach at a small church, and so he just invited some friends, a number of friends, to come to the small church and be their support. And so Hannah came to me and explained that she would like to go this Sunday morning and drive to Markham and be there to support him. Now, you guys know, very unusual. My kids, my family did not miss church, you know, even in their sick. But Hannah needed to drive to Markham, she said, to be supportive. And it turned out she was the only one of his friends who came, you know, in this small congregation. It was, you know, noticeable. So a woman can show openness to a man appropriately. But the problem is that young women today often transmit a closeness without even realizing it. Or maybe they do realize, but think with me. How have young women today been trained to impress people? By telling their plans for education, further education, "I'm planning to do this, here's my plans for my career," and all this. Yet, does this impress a young man who wants a family? No. Does it communicate an openness to him or his plan for life? No. I've heard it said, that young ladies today are raised in our culture and our society with feminism. They're raised to be independent, take charge, aggressive, to make sort of act like a man, and you know, live in the masculine, and be, you know, just as tough, tougher than all the men around. And what this man said is that if a woman does this and acts like she'd been trained to act, that she likely will never even meet a real man. Why? Because real men feel that pushiness. You can often feel that. You just walk in the room, it's like, whoa, okay. And what does a real man do? He just walks away. He's not interested in, that is not the kind of person he is looking for. That is not what attracts him. I read a comment by a young lady, obviously not a believer, and she was, somebody was talking about, you know, back in high school and, you know, and she said, no. Guys today don't want a girl, and I can't repeat what she said, but essentially with good looks. Guys today don't want a girl with good looks. Guys today want a girl with skills. And I thought, who told you that? I mean, I know who told, all of society tells you that, but really? You believe that? I mean, really, do guys evaluate a woman, potential spouse? Do guys evaluate a woman based on her earning potential? I mean, really? I hope not. And I mean, if he does, is that really the kind of guy you want? And yet, a young lady should evaluate a guy based on, you know, is he capable? Is he a hard worker? Will he be strong enough to provide for me and my family? Another story. When I asked Anita's father if I could marry her, he said, we just happen to be coming soon for a visit. Can we talk? I said, great. Yeah. Yeah. As we talked, he asked my plans and situation, and yeah, I barely had enough money to, hopefully, with working part-time, I could hopefully finish school, and then I was planning on going on to seminary. But he said, yes, you can marry her. And I remember talking to him, especially later, he made this clear. He said, yeah, I realize you didn't have much, anything, but you had a plan. And you had shown enough dedication and resourcefulness to be able to work that plan. And so, father, protective, entrusted his daughter to me. Notice too that though Naomi suggested Ruth take this first step to go and show her openness to Boaz, notice in verse 4, she's very, very clear. You let him make the first move. You let him speak. Then he will explain to you what you should do. Verse 4, you let him lead. You show openness, but you let him lead. And then verse 18, again, Naomi said, my daughter, wait until you find out how things go, for he won't rest until he resolves this today. So she's saying, wait. See, it's the woman can show some openness, but it's not the place of the woman to keep pushing or to manipulate. Not at all. Naomi's right. The man needs to be able to keep the position of leader or start out the relationship with this position of leader. He needs to be the initiator, the provider, to show his own choice in the matter. And this goes both ways. A man can show interest and begin to offer a relationship to a woman, but he must let the woman show her choice throughout the process. That's how this is to work. Well, then Naomi. So is Naomi a meddling mother-in-law? Yeah? Okay. No. See, she's not meddling in the relationship or in child rearing, as a meddling mother-in-law often does. No. Naomi only suggested. Remember, she only suggested. And the only way she could begin to suggest this is that she knew Boaz's character. Okay? She knew that this was not a dangerous situation that she was sending her daughter-in-law into. Not at all. She knew his character and knew that he would do the right thing and he would provide either yes or no on marrying her, but she knew that Boaz would do the right thing. So she only suggested. See, Ruth is in a new country. She doesn't know the culture. She doesn't know what's acceptable and what's not. This is a new religion for her. And notice that the text never even hints that Ruth does not welcome Naomi's advice. It doesn't imply that at all. She follows this advice. Now, we hear these lines that the book records, but realize that doesn't mean that these are the only things they ever said to each other. No, this went on for weeks through the harvest, and they probably talked back and forth, and so realize what we have here is a story summary. So it's short. You see, I don't even think Naomi could have spoken directly to Boaz either, just in this situation. And imagine if she did. Okay, so she is hawking her daughter to the rich man. And would he have even believed? Oh, thanks. But is she interested? I mean, seriously? Anyway, what we learn from this is that it is okay for parents to be involved in marriage selection. It is okay. It is even okay to suggest a match. I mean, we're not talking about arranged marriage here. Or we're not talking about pushing this. Not at all. But see, our culture seeks to isolate young adults in this most important decision, in this most important area, the most important decision you will make in your whole life after following Christ is who you would marry. And the way our society sets it up, they want young people to go away, you know, off to school or go away and never, I mean, think about the movie, Guess Who's Coming for Dinner, right? She's bringing this man home because she plans to marry him, and she's just now introducing him to the family. I mean, really? They should have been talking all the way along. They should have been part of it. They should have known each other. They should have been building a friendship so that everyone is happy by the time it comes to talk about marriage. Now, I realize you may not have had this kind of relationship with your parents. I understand that. And that even, you know, maybe your parents weren't even believers. But even if they were, maybe they didn't give godly counsel. I understand that. But imagine, think about it though. If everybody is following God, parents and children and their adult children and their, you know, if everybody's following God, and this will become a natural thing to talk about. A natural part of life, crucial part of life to talk about. Now, I've talked to some Christian parents who say, I don't think I should talk to my kids about marriage because, well, what if God's plan is not for them to marry at all? Now, first of all, God's plan is for most people to marry. Yes, Jesus said there are some who have renounced marriage for the kingdom of God. That's fine. But that clearly is the exception, not the rule. And then if it is God's plan for them to marry, and you've not talked to them, you've lost decades of time in training them in this most important of decisions and relationships. I've known some parents who say, well, I don't have any control over this. No, you may not have control, but you could have some influence if you talk to them about this. See, Naomi couldn't glean, help provide for the family, but she could help provide for her daughter-in-law because of her position in the family, because of the inheritance laws and how this was to be taken care of. So, I would say to you young adults, talk to your parents about this. Talk to them. Share your heart. Share your longings. Share some interest that you might have in someone that you've, or someone that you meet, or someone that's becoming a closer friend. Share that with them. Pray together. Likewise, I think there's certainly a place for a friend to privately make a suggestion of someone to a friend. I know some friends who were talking, and one, you know, was talking about, you know, single, and you know, is there anybody? No. Well, you know, there's this one girl in university. I wonder if she's still single. But do you think she'd like, you know, somebody like me, you know, plain guy like me? And the friend said, "You'll never know until you ask her." Well, yeah, the end of the story. She was interested. They got married, two kids. Yeah. Who knows what would happen if the friend hadn't made this suggestion. See, many have written that it obviously is harder and harder for young women and men to match today, to enter into marriage. The average age for the first marriage is getting older and older in our society. So yeah, the question is, how do men and women even start to come together? Where do they meet? How do they show openness? This is a very awkward situation these days. Our society is having a real problem here. So the places that they used to meet, especially church, where they'd get to know people, family gatherings, even work, especially with teens not working as much anymore, it's becoming harder and harder for people to get to know people of the opposite sex, to even learn to build friendships with someone of the opposite sex, and much less to learn to work toward possible relationship with them. Part of the problem is attitude. This society pushes so much the hookup culture, and it's not even building a relationship toward marriage, and no question we need to avoid that. And as Christians, we speak about avoiding that, and lots of young people growing up have understood that they need to avoid the hookup culture. But so because of that, they feel awkward. They feel awkward in relationships with someone of the opposite sex. They tend to avoid these kind of relationships. I can't tell you how many times I've gone to, had some kind of a gathering of young adults, and, you know, the guys are all over here and the girls are all over there, and I think, it wasn't like that when I was in school. I understand that awkwardness, and so we need to be helping young adults to develop friendships with people of the opposite sex and to show openness and have the courage to pursue relationship that would lead toward marriage. Well, hopefully there are a number of lessons for each of us at each stage in life. We see that it is the man's job to initiate and pursue, but that a woman can show openness appropriately. And these matters are definitely best handled privately at first, to give each space to show interest or not, or some interest and then not interest and then not, you know, back and forth, kind of like as we were starting off. And that's all right. Others may hear God saying, you might ought to suggest someone to your son or to a friend. Now, I'm not saying that we should all need to go busybody meddling no, but if God is speaking to you, you may need to make that suggestion. And then some of you guys, maybe some of you, like Boaz, need to wake up and hear God say, hey, notice this young woman at your feet. She is of good character. And all through this story, that's a major part of it. Boaz, Ruth, good character. God brought them together. We can all grow in trust of the sovereignty of God, who works His will even through life struggles. We each need to come under His wing for protection, both physical and that spiritual protection that can only be found in Christ. Boaz is seen as a type of Christ in that He is the kinsman redeemer and Jesus is our redeemer. We can all be inspired by examples of loyalty and devotion and integrity and generosity that we see here in the book of Ruth. Join with me as we pray.